Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Pharmaceutical Commerce Podcast. I'm Nico Saraceno, Associate Editor of PC, and I'm here with Mike Christel, Group Managing Editor at MJH Life Sciences, PC's parent company. We are pleased to be joined today by Matt Reynolds, VP of Real World Evidence at IQVIA. Matt has more than 20 years of experience in non-interventional research and has deep expertise in the use of real-world data to address questions of effectiveness, safety, and value of pharmaceutical products. He was previously VP of Epidemiology with Evidera, a contract research organization specializing in real-world evidence solutions. Matt joins us today to discuss the implications of FDA's recent draft guidance on using real-world data from electronic health records and medical claims data to aid in drug development and decision-making. Matt, thank you so much for being with us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, we definitely do appreciate it, Matt. Thanks for joining. Yeah, we thought we'd dive kind of right into the theme we had, but maybe before, you know, we get your thoughts on FDA's new, RWD guidance, can you perhaps take a step back and explain, the concept of real-world data, real-world evidence for those in our audience not totally familiar, despite seeing those terms out there, they're out there and a lot in recent years?
Absolutely. So as was noted before, I've been in the industry for over 20 years. I actually started my career with in the pharmaceutical, directly with pharmaceutical companies with Searle and Pharmacia, and then eventually AstraZeneca. And that was a couple decades ago, and I was doing real world data then. So this is not new. I started analyzing medical claims data, electronic health records, and then building my career to the point of designing those studies and working for a company now that where I've got the remit for driving innovation to help take prospectively collect the data and marry it to other existing medical data. So it absolutely makes sense to explain what this is, because it's been around a while and the terms have changed. So for those of you who are listening, if you're dealing with pharmaceutical studies, oftentimes you're thinking of clinical trial data. These are the studies that are typically conducted to drive approvals of new medications, expansions of labels, things like that. And this is, these are studies where patients are randomized to one treatment or another, a very tight study design that gives you very high quality evidence at the end of the day around drug efficacy and drug safety. The issues with those, with that type of study, is that what you see in those very stringent type of clinical design, where you limit the type of patients that come in, you only follow them maybe for 6 weeks or a couple of months, very strict with regards to what you're comparing to, et cetera, is that those results may not always translate to the real world, the world we're living in real clinical practice, et cetera. So real world data is basically data, all of the data outside of clinical trials. It is data that relates to patients' health status, health quality, the provision of healthcare, everything from patient interactions with doctors to patient self-reported data. And it's changed even from the time that I started, because back when I started, we didn't have things like Fitbits. Actually, we barely had internet when I first started. So the ability to collect data and the types of data that exist are numerous now. And so real-world data is fairly encompassing of all of this broad spectrum of data, from the medical claims that are associated with your insurance company, to electronic health record data, to patient-reported outcomes, so quality of life measures, to these wearables that I mentioned, and everything in between. So real-world data is all of this broad swath of medical-related data and patient health status-related data that's not clinical trial-focused. And real-world evidence is basically what we get when we analyze that data. So when we analyze real-world data, not surprisingly, we get real-world evidence. So it's basically taking and shaping that data and using it to answer the questions that we might have about how drugs, interventions, paid disease natural history, and things like that work in the real world.
You hear that this phrase, fit for purpose out there a lot being used.
Yeah.
Maybe in the context of RWD, what is it meant by fitness for purpose of these sort of data sources in the pharma space?
So that term is pretty new, and it's something that's been more defined over time. I think it was almost implicit in the way that we conducted research, you know, years and years ago. But what you'll hear fitness for purpose or fitness of use or some combination thereof, what it means is the real world data that you want to leverage for the research question that you've selected, does it meet the optimal standards? Does it meet the quality assessments of, you know, to be able to generate high quality data? So for, you know, a very blatant example, you know, if you wanted to look at the risk of hospitalization in some patient group, you know, related to some intervention, and you chose a data set that only had general practice data and no inpatient data at all, it would not be fit for purpose. It doesn't even have the core data components you're looking for. You can't find your outcome. So it's really the fitness for use or fitness for purpose is really going through the data set that you have and figuring out when you bring a research question to the table, does this data set work? Does it have all of the key components that I need? Are they complete? Are they at a granular enough level that I'll be able to make the type of conclusion that I want at the end of the day? How generalizable is it? Where are the strengths and limitations? And I'll tell you, there's no perfect data set out there pretty much for any research question. So it's this continual assessment for, does this data set work better than anything else that's out there? Does this give me an answer? And what are the caveats and can I live with them?
Yes, that's interesting. That feeds into, you know, the deeper dive now that we can kind of shift to on the new guidance released by the FDA in September, you know, on using EHRs and claims data to support drug submissions and regulatory decision-making. From your vantage point, what are a couple of the key takeaways or action points, you know, for sponsors and others, you know, from this new guidance, and what opportunities could it possibly usher in?
The opportunity is clear. The, you know, the FDA and other, you know, international regulatory agencies as well outside of this guidance are becoming more open to leveraging real world data. And so laying out a guidance for how to do this best with a couple of these different types of real world data sources, as you mentioned, electronic health records and claims, really kind of sets the stage for saying, we'll consider this type of evidence, but you need to go through a process to make sure that it's good, it's high quality, it's fit for purpose, as we termed it before. So I see that as the opportunity because before, you know, you may have had to really state your case pretty clearly as to why and how real world data options might be better than other traditional options that have been leveraged for, you know, 30, 40, 50 years in regulatory decision making. And so, you know, that kind of opportunity is great. This guidance then gives you a little bit more direction as to what do I need to do to be able to make my case? What do I need to think through, you know, before I come to the FDA, you know, with something that's half baked or not fit for purpose or not usable, you know, it should hopefully, you know, dispel some of the poor options that folks may have been considering and really refine and strengthen the ones that should be fit for purpose and potentially usable that could deliver high quality evidence faster for, you know, more real time or informed decision making.
Yeah, would you say it's doing a good job advancing this overall, you know, the overall discussions, you know, coming out of the 21st Century, you know, Cures Act from a few years ago? Is this part of that FDA's focus on working more with pharma and, you know, and using this data to benefit drug development?
Absolutely. I think the 21st Century Cures Act really kind of set the stage to say we should be considering, be open to different types of for real world data for label expansion and drug safety evaluation, et cetera. You know, that, and honestly, I think the pandemic likely impacted many people's willingness to leverage real world data because there's just not time to do long-term trials when you are fighting a pandemic and fighting something like COVID. Leveraging real-world data, looking at medical interactions and outcomes in almost real time from some of these data sources, or even delayed only a few weeks or a month, it still allows you to make much better real-time decision-making. And that's not necessarily what this guidance is. It's not saying, hey, we want to be able to do things more rapidly and you know, make rash decisions. That's not the case here, but I'm just saying it kind of lays the groundwork for being more open to it when you've been using it for the past year plus of this pandemic in a very viable way to make good decisions about which products do, don't work, the course of natural history of disease and a new disease we haven't seen before. And so, yeah, I think there's definitely an opportunity there. Now, this guidance, there are other guidances that have come out since this one did. One on regulatory standards for how to submit. Another one on registries. I believe there may be more coming as well. There's an appetite and definitely a desire, from the FDA and other regulatory agencies to consider and leverage everything at hand, including real world data, especially since some of this type of data can be deemed quicker in bigger populations in an ethical way and be allow for making good quality decisions on the safety and effectiveness of medical products.
Fascinating, Matt. And I know you did start to touch on it in terms of the difficulty surrounding leveraging this data, especially during this time of a pandemic, for instance. But viewing it from a general perspective, what type of practical challenges would you say that this specific guidance presents for the industry at this moment in time?
So I think when I've read this, and again, this is coming from dealing with this for 20 plus years and oftentimes making these fit for purpose decisions almost subconsciously and walking through it because I've dealt with hundreds of different data sets and a multitude of different questions for different indications. I think the issue that I see with this guidance is that it's trying to lay out best practices. How do we assess this? How do we assure that the data is high quality, that it's complete? We're mixing claims and EHRs together, which are two different monsters, really. They're not the same. And the document doesn't always provide specificity for which type of data they're talking about. So for example, they talk about making sure that you can consider continuity of care. You can do that in medical claims data because you have enrollment times for insurance plans, but you can't do that in an electronic medical record because it's basically a place of service that this is working. If people go in and out the door, you don't know what else is happening outside of that brick and mortar facility in that network. And you don't know when they started coming or stopped coming, it's difficult to tell when the difference between not coming in and missing data. So I think the biggest issue is they lay out a lot of the different requirements for high quality data, validating variables, complete data, understanding the genesis of the data set and what drove it and what factors affected what you see at the end of the day. A lot of those types of pieces of information or ways to enhance and improve the quality of data set are not possible on a lot of real world data options. So it leaves almost no options if you were to try to employ everything that's been laid out here. And I think what it still is going to require is for people who've been experienced in this field to go through and say, all right, for this question, which ones are the highest, of most concern to address to make sure that we get to the right data set? Because like I said before, there's no perfect database. There's no perfect real world data option typically. So it's really finding the one that's the best and where they have their warts, where there are issues with data incompleteness or lack of detail, making sure that that doesn't infringe on the ability to have a high quality conclusion for your data study. So making sure that the components that are pertinent and absolutely necessary for your research question are available, addressed, and defensible in the data set that you're using.
And you mentioned having to pick that data wisely in terms of what's practical to use and what isn't. So keeping that in mind, Matt, which of these considerations specifically do you think need to be delved into more deeply?
I would say two. One of the solutions that's been provided in here oftentimes is to provide data linkage. Say, consider data linkage. So if you have a claims data set where you have fairly complete medical care, link it to another data set where you can get the clinical detail of within the medical interaction. So a claims data is going to rely on a billing code, probably a good, at least indicator that something of interest happened. But that a health record or a medical chart or something of that may give you more detail on the severity of the disease, the symptoms, things that aren't, as part of the claims billing interaction. And that's great to say, hey, let's link the data. The problem is every time that you link, go back to your math class and look and think of the Venn diagram. You take the two circles, you overlap them. Unfortunately, most data linkages are going to end up with a fairly small overlapping here. So you may have started with millions and millions of patients. Some of these data sets, these real world data options, may have hundreds of millions of patients. But then when you link it, there is a serious chance that you're going to lose 90% or more of your patients in your core data set. So what does that mean to your generalizability of your result? What does it mean to, if it's a fairly rare condition, did you just go from 500 patients to 5 patients? And what can you do with that? So it's potentially problematic as a solution to improve the quality when you need to just disintegrate your core data set. The other topic that, that I have concern with, which is a great idea, and necessary for some components of studies, is to validate variables. And they talk about validation of outcomes, of of your exposure variables, of your diagnosis for your cohort. All of these are important. We do want to make sure that the patients that we've identified in these studies actually have the condition of interest, actually got the exposure of interest, actually we're controlling for all of the confounding variables appropriately with high quality definitions, and that we pick up the outcome of interest. The problem is that it's difficult to validate in many real-world data options. You usually do that through physician assessment and or medical chart validation. One, it's very difficult, especially with patient privacy, but also just the way that these data sources are built. It's very difficult to get medical charts and full linkage to electronic health records and or get physicians to assess in fairly real time these outcomes and these diagnoses and such. So you really have to kind of pick and choose. If you want to do all of it, this becomes an unbearable study that likely is not feasible and not possible to implement. Oftentimes when you do get into these charts and you chase them down, we need to keep in mind, there's not one chart. There are multitudes of charts for patients. They could be from their general practice, from their hospitals, from their specialists. If they've changed, then you now multiply these as well, finding the right one or ones, and then crossing your fingers that the data you're looking for is actually in there. And oftentimes it's not. So those are my biggest concerns, are that the solutions that are laid out are not necessarily solutions that are going to be viable and applicable broadly and consistently across many of the studies.
There's certainly a lot of layers there. And you mentioned the challenges to validate these data sets. And then, the difficulty in getting a lot of these patient charts. You referenced like patient privacy challenges. Any other further insights or thoughts in that particular challenge to making, RWD work?
So I think the patient privacy is of paramount importance by everybody that I've dealt with. Mm-hmm. A company like IQVIA that deals with real world data, but also deals with prospective trial data, registry data, et cetera, as regulators, healthcare practitioners, and patients themselves. It is important. And when I've had to conduct studies that have some issue around patient privacy, there are layers and layers and many, many different checks that need to be conducted to be able to allow for things to be done. And I've run into roadblocks where it's just not feasible to link data, or it's not feasible to get that extra piece of information because it makes the patient potentially identifiable. So I don't know how to answer because I'm not a patient privacy expert, but it is always a concern being able to link data, being able to supplement data, to collect additional data oftentimes requires additional consents. It requires additional rigor, even if the consent is not required. But at the same time, the landscape has changed in real world data and more options are becoming available. For example, there are ways now where a patient, with these electronic medical charts, which physicians have been using in their electronic health records for probably 10, 15, 20 years regularly, 10, 15 years regularly, patients can now access it themselves. Some of you may have, accessed your own patient mm-hmm. chart from your GP and, some my chart or some variation of that. Being able to have that data, not just at the physician, but now also from the patient. There are ways now that a patient can provide consent electronically as part, within these apps to third parties to be able to conduct research. And so there are some ways that there were, while there were hurdles before, technology is also making it possible to make it easier in some cases to be able to access some of that mm-hmm. data for, good research purposes as well. So I'm not an expert. I do know that it's difficult to navigate patient privacy issues, but it has to be done. And no research that we do doesn't incorporate that at the outset.
Are you seeing these options, like you're saying, for patients to access these data, their privacy, their medical data more easily? Is that making, helping address some of these, so-called missingness, data missingness issues?
I do. I mean, it does. I mean, so the key there, though, is that it's not going to, that type of solution doesn't help when you're just trying to pull some data off the shelf, like a medical claims data set that goes back 2 or 3 years, and you want to look retrospectively at some research questions. But if you have that patient in real time, maybe as part of a registry or part of a health network that can opt in to a prospective real world study, it makes it easier to collect a lot of that information without having to burden the patient. They can answer and provide the core information that's needed that can only come from them. And then they can say, hey, look, use my chart, use my medical information here to fill in the rest of the gaps. And you can follow me, prospectively through X period of time. And I give my consent for that. So it does help that. It doesn't solve it, because even when you're getting those charts through an approach like that, if that study participant or patient were to be hospitalized somewhere that isn't providing data to the same location or same network that they've given their consent for the chart, you don't pick it up. So there's still issues at completeness. And I don't know that many of the data sets are going to be able to solve the completeness issue for the data that's in there, or the missingness issue. And for those of you listening, let's assume I'm putting air quotes up around some of this, because it's not really that it's missing or incomplete per se. It's part of the way that data set is built. And it may or may not make a difference when you're asking the right research question or the wrong research question. So, even if data is missing, it might not be pertinent, or it might not, affect or bias the estimates, your conclusions, but it may be absolutely critical. And hence you may have to consider a different data set. It might not be something you can solve or fix. It may just mean that you have to choose a second best option or a better option.
And you started talking about that missing, quote unquote, missing data. So, mm-hmm. I feel like we can probably see where your mindset is for the most part, but as far as future benefits for patients are concerned, mm-hmm. keeping this in mind, do you feel, as some others do, that an FDA mandate on collaboration between HCPs and the companies collecting and curating health data to better align this EHR and clinical trial data, do you think that would go a long way in making determinations a lot clearer and far easier? Do you think it would help simplify that process?
I think make sure that data is being collected consistently as completely as possible for some particular objectives makes sense. You'll get a better result. The problem that I have, I guess I'm sort of a pragmatist here. The problem that I would see here is that you don't necessarily know what questions you want to ask until there's an issue. Or sometimes there's what it is right at the outset, but other times you're more responsive and such. So, how do you get broad, buy-in or, engagement from healthcare practitioners to provide you data consistently to all regulatory and or pharmaceutical companies that is of the right quality and completeness that you need when you don't know which question you're planning to ask? I find that a little bit difficult. So it sounds great. And if it was something where you're like, look, for all oncology patients with this type of condition, we should be collecting tumor size or stage consistently using this manner, and we should always be looking for tumor response and defining it this way. And if I'm using those terms incorrectly, my apologies, listeners. I'm not an oncologist. I'm just pulling some buzzwords out that I think I'm using correctly. If it was for something like that, and that could be leveraged, for a variety of different research initiatives, that I could see making sense.
Matt, we really want to thank you for taking the time to come on the show today. I know that our listeners will certainly be able to pull out quite a bit of valuable insight from what you share with us.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. And for all you listeners, be sure to stay in the loop of our latest updates via our website at pharmaceuticalcommerce.com or on our SoundCloud page. Take care, everyone.